It's Morning Edition on 90.1 WABE. I'm Dennis O'Hare. Former Georgia Secretary of State Karen Handel had a close call, but she made it out of the April special election in the 6th Congressional District. And since then, she has pulled into a very tight race with Democrat John Ossoff, who finished first back in April. Last week, we spoke with Mr. Ossoff, and now Secretary Handel joins us. Welcome and thanks.
Thank you very much. Please call me Karen. We've known each other way too long for formalities like that.
As we speak, the Congressional Budget Office has released its analysis of the latest House plan to repeal and replace Obamacare, and it forecasts a potential reduction in the budget deficit of about $119 billion. Also projects 23 million more Americans would go uninsured over the next 10 years. Now, this has passed the House. It's over in the Senate. But if you were in the House at the time, would you have voted for this particular measure?
I would have, because the status quo with Obamacare and the exchanges is unacceptable. It is completely collapsing, and there really was no option but to begin to at least have the conversation about what we're going to do. Right here in Georgia, premiums have skyrocketed. More people are leaving the exchanges or just being priced out. Steve and I get our insurance on the exchange, and we've seen our insurance pre-Obamacare go from about $400 a month in a premium to just over $1,300. So it's really becoming quite onerous. So there are some good things in the bill and obviously some things that need to get addressed on the Senate side, and I have great confidence that that'll happen.
But speaking of premium increases, while there would be premium reductions for some folks, the CBO is estimating that particularly elderly folks and folks with pre-existing conditions might see premiums go up by a lot.
Well,
is this
what the
president promised?
Well, let's get into the verbiage and the vernacular that you're using, predictions and might and all of those things. Part of the approach with all of this is to put as much as we possibly can back into the direction and the purview of the states, and then secondly, to get the federal government out of the middle of the conversation about how we're going to make healthcare decisions. So it was twofold on all of that. And again, I think for the things that were good about the bill, eliminating the mandate, rolling back and repealing massive tax increases that were included in there, those were good things. It did keep the provision that said someone with pre-existing conditions cannot be a reason to exclude them from coverage. So, and it puts in $8 billion.
But it doesn't guarantee against premium increases for those
people. It put in
people.
$8 billion. Well, it doesn't – there is – well, I don't believe in having, quote, a guarantee by the federal government for anyone.
No, but
I
mean you were saying the problem with the current system is premium increases.
Yes. But again, with the free market – you have much more competition. When you have competition, you start to see costs come down, and you're going to have increased choice for patients and for families. There is virtually no choice. Where do you get your insurance?
I have insurance through my employer.
Yes. So for those of us who don't have that option, there is no choice. And on our exchange in Georgia, we're down to two. It's probably going to go down to one provider with a very limited network of doctors even in there. So the point here, what we have is completely unstable and crashing. So there really needed to be a focus to move to something else. Was this perfect? No. But again, I think there's going to be some big changes to it on the Senate side, be watching that.
Is that what you're counting on? Is your thought, let's get something out of here, flawed as it is, and just get it over into the Senate?
Well, remember, I wasn't up there. So I think, again, what was passed, ACHA, was a good first step. Not perfect, but a good first step to get things moving. And we already know, you know, some things that need to get looked at. You know, yes, I'd like to see there be more money put in on the pre-existing condition front for those high-risk pools. I want to make sure that states like Georgia that did not expand Medicaid, that they are not treated in a diminished way overall. So I have confidence that that will take place. Secretary Price, I have a great deal, as everyone in the 6th District, most people have a great deal of confidence in him, and I do. So I'll be looking to him for his counsel about things should I have this privilege.
Let me quickly pick up on Medicaid, because there are some major cuts both in this bill and in the proposed budget. But aren't most of the Georgians who are covered by Medicaid children, the elderly, people with disabilities. And if this bill were to pass in its current form, wouldn't it put the state in a tremendous budget hole when it comes to Medicaid?
Well, you just met which bill? You just talked about two bills,
right.
So I don't know which one you're talking about.
Well, they do tie together in that the budget bill presumes that the health care bill passes.
I understand, but you mix both of them. So let's be crystal clear about what you're asking me. First of all, it is abundantly clear that ACHA in its current form is not going to be the final bill. So talking about it being the final bill is relatively moot point here, right? So, and then when you go to the budget, let's also consider that in that the president has proposed moving to a block grant style approach for Medicaid. And while, yes, the grants to the states for Medicaid have been reduced, that does not mean that the states across the board, including Georgia, have to reduce Medicaid. It really lets it go back into the hands of the state so that states can be the drivers of this. Additionally, within the budget, there is increased funding under the health section for maternal children preschool area. That budget goes up by, I want to say, 11% if my memory serves.
Could you say, though?
Oh, and by the way, CHIP is increased as well.
CHIP is the state's program for children.
Correct.
Could you say to Georgia, as a member of Congress, state government, okay, you are not going to face the Medicaid funding crisis that you had before?
That's a preposterous question to ask me. I cannot predict. There's all kinds of factors that will go into this. So asking me to portend the future is really...
But isn't that what the CBO projections are all about? We have to somehow have an idea of what the effect will be in the future before we pass a bill that affects us.
I understand. But if you look at what the CBO has projected versus what others are talking about, what Congressman, now Secretary Price is projecting. And again, I just want to be clear, which bill are you talking about? Mm-hmm. I think you're talking about ACHA, mm-hmm. not the budget. The predictions were far off even when it came to Obamacare. So those predictions and projections within CBO, they are broad parameters, guidelines that any given decision made by a state could affect that. So I think before we have a rush over, you know, ACHA being too definitive about what's in it and what's not in it, it's still not even halfway through the process. Let's let the debate continue. And what happens is you have a bill from the House. It was the best that could be achieved at that moment. Now the Senate will go to work on it. And I expect there to be some pretty significant changes. And then there will be an opportunity for both sides to take a look at it and get the best bill possible.
Okay, let's talk about the budget specifically here. President Trump said on the first day of his campaign and repeatedly thereafter, and these are his words, save Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security without cuts, have to do it. Does this budget with the projected cuts to Medicaid break that promise?
I'm not going to get into, I don't even know what mm-hmm. was promised or not promised by the president, and that's not my job to...
But it was one of the things he ran on. It was one of the things that Republicans campaigned for.
I am not President Trump. I am Karen Handel running for the 6th District congressional seat.
He did
and,
come, to,
hang
come
on,
here
and
to campaign for you, though.
So what? Nancy Pelosi is going to campaign and has been campaigning for John Ossoff. Do you ask him every single time? About everything
Nancy
Pelosi.
I asked him last week, would he be independent?
Look, the bottom line is I am an independent individual around how I'm going to serve. You've watched me in public service for a long time, and I think, Dennis, you would concur that I am an individual who walks my own path, and I'm going to do what is in the best interest of the 6th District. In terms of whether the president is meeting or breaking his promise, that is not for me to say or judge or make my decision around. I'm making my decision based on what is in the best interest of the people of the 6th District. With this budget, there are some good things, and there are some really, frankly, troubling things for me as I look at what the 6th District is about and what we need. This is, first of all, a budget was presented, which is a step in the right direction versus what we got from Obama for 8 years. Secondly, it is balanced with what we are facing on an international front from national security and the threats here at home to reinforce on the military side. That is a positive step. There is increased funding in the maternal and infant and children's line item. There's increased funding in CHIP. The CURE Act under NIH is increased.
National Institutes of Health.
Yes, National Institutes of Health. The Medicaid grants to the states, that line item is reduced. That is over the course, it's important for people to remember, over the course of 10 years, that reduction. So it does give states the flexibility to turn and make their priorities. And I do believe we can, if you are a Republican and a conservative and we say we want the federal government to be less engaged, then you have to also believe that more things are going down to the state level. And I do believe that. It's not just about a budget and making cuts in a budget. It's also about what are we going to do on the growth side of the ledger, growth side of our balance sheet as well. And those two do really go hand in hand.
You said it's balanced, though, but it is based on the assumption that the economy is going to grow at an annual rate of 3% by 2020 and stay there. We haven't had 3% growth or anything close to it in years, and economists
thanks to Obama and his incredible proliferation of regulations and taxes.
But economists on the left and the right have said that those projections are simply unrealistic. Republicans have argued against deficits and increasing our debt. If these projections are as unrealistic as a lot of experts say they are, is this a budget that's even tenable?
I believe that we simply have to have the kinds of pro-growth policies to move economic growth up to a minimum of 3%. And I actually believe that that is achievable with broad tax reform. And it's not just corporate tax relief. There has to be middle-income individual tax relief as well for middle-class families. And this is not – when it comes to budget, we are in such a hole around the budget that we're not going to cut our way out of it. So we have to attack this from both a fiscal responsibility standpoint on the spending side as well as on the growth and revenue side. And I do believe if we have – we can move the United States from being in the bottom tier from a tax climate into even the middle tier, that would be the beginning of a great – new era of growth.
But you've put together budgets, admittedly, on a much smaller scale. And you even talked about that in a recent speech to the Jewish War Veterans Association about some of the things that you had to fix and the assumptions you had to make. Given the fact that the administration even used the same $2.6 trillion to fund the tax cuts and to reduce the budget deficit, would you have put together a budget based on those assumptions?
I'd have to look. You know, the budget just came out yesterday, with all due respect.
Yeah.
So in really going through and getting down into the nitty-gritty of all of that, I can't make a speculation on that. I do think, though, that you do have to have good, solid assumptions, and people can agree to disagree about those assumptions. I'm willing to give the benefit of the doubt at this point so that we can see what we're going to have and go with that on the revenue side, because I do believe that tax reform is going to be a significant injection for the economy and in the area of actually building budgets. You have the opportunity to make corrections. And remember, for your listeners, ladies and gentlemen, this is a 10-year budget. It's not a 1 year. It's not a 2 year. It is over a 10-year horizon. So the likelihood that there won't be things that change in it over the course of 10 years is very, very high that we would make some changes, of course.
If you win this runoff, you will likely be in the House by the time this budget comes up for a vote.
Yes, and I hope I will be on the budget committee.
Would you vote for it in its present
form? I think it's going to go through. Dennis, you know this. When a White House presents a budget, it is the very initial first step in the process. And to think that this budget is going to look exactly like it is today, fast forward, you know, a few months from now when it actually moves through the committees and onto the floor of the House, is unrealistic. It is going to change a lot. And my focus is going to be in the area of, one, a balanced budget, and two, the things that are in the best interest of the 6th District and the state. And there are some good things. It's got funding for the Savannah ports in there that wouldn't have been there under Obama. So, I mean, there's some positive things. So let's go through it step by step and line by line and put the good, work on the things that are not good.
There are House and Senate committee investigations of Russian meddling in the 2016 election and possible connections to the Trump campaign. That's what the investigations will try to find out. Do you have any questions, though, about the president's response to the Russian investigations?
Well, I'm pleased that the special counsel was appointed by the Department of Justice. I think that was just a good step forward, and I'm encouraged by that. So now we have the FBI investigation, the special counsel, House and Senate investigations. And what I have always tried to do is not get too engaged in innuendo and speculation. I'm not there. I haven't had the briefings that many people have had. And as someone who has had to deal with some very sensitive things, the $7 million missing from Jackie Barrett, again, a microcosm of what's happening. But speculation and innuendo is often extremely unproductive when you have very serious issues that really we need to get to the bottom of.
Well, what we have established are at least some questions with evidence behind them, not conclusions, but would you say that these things are more than speculation? The president firing James Comey, who was investigating for the FBI the possible ties to Russia. The White House hasn't denied the New York Times report that the president told Comey he hoped he would let the investigation of General Flynn go. The Times reported that the Russian ambassador and foreign minister heard from the president that Comey was a nut job and the firing took pressure off of him. The former CIA director even recently testified he was concerned about a pattern of contact between Russian officials and members of the Trump campaign.
Here's the bottom line.
My question is,
concerns, though, don't equal
they're
an
not
actual
conclusions,
violation.
But are they more than
conclusion?
Speculation?
I have said from the very beginning, let's let the facts lead the way on this. And, you know, again, you know, I've been very clear. I think Comey should have been fired long ago. And had he been, remember, Democrats wanted Comey fired first. Now when he was fired, they didn't want him to be fired. So, you know, this was an individual who had lost confidence on both sides, lost the confidence of both sides. So let's, with the four investigations that are going on, let's let these investigators get to the bottom of actually what happened, because we as Americans deserve to know precisely what happened. And if there were specific violations, etc., regardless, let the facts take us there and take the appropriate action when we know precisely.
You've talked about your independence, and despite the fact that the president campaigned for you, that the vice president will be here for you, mm-hmm. that Speaker Ryan campaigned for you, if it were shown that the president obstructed justice, not asking you to say that you would, but would you entertain the possibility of voting for impeachment if it ever got that far?
I don't believe it is appropriate to, again, engage in speculative futures. I'm going to take each issue as it comes to me at the time it does. That's just the appropriate and professional way to move forward in a position as important as being in the House of Representatives.
Let's come back to regulations for just a moment. You talked about cutting regulations. Now, the president has pledged to cut financial and banking regulations along with environmental regulations and many others. But specifically on the financial side, wasn't a lack of oversight one of the reasons we got into the recession of 2009 in the first place, that no one was watching the store in terms of questionable practices that really helped rattle the economy?
What happened is, yes, there was lack of oversight, but then there was an overcorrection from the Obama administration. You know, regulations, the most prolific thing that came up over the 8 years during President Obama's administration were regulations. And right now, the House is working on its repeal of various sections of Dodd-Frank to be able to put some sanity back into things. The truth is that over the past 8 years under Obama, especially in the area of banking, the regulators really became punitive in how they approached the banks. And we saw it so devastatingly here in Georgia with the highest number of bank failures, I believe, of any state in the country.
Was that a problem of regulation, or was that a problem of oversight and management at those institutions? I mean, why, if it's federal regulations, why would Georgia see so many bank failures?
combination, I would say. But I will say this. When regulators come in and a bank is able to keep its doors open by getting, let's say, 70 cents on a dollar from its assets, and the regulators say, no, that's not good enough, we're going to shut the doors, what is better? Zero on the dollar or 70 cents on the dollar? I would argue 70 cents on a dollar, keeping the doors open and let that bank sustain itself is the better approach.
Very quickly on foreign policy, you have said we need to end the nuclear deal with Iran. But President Trump, who promised to do that immediately upon taking office, hasn't yet. In fact, the administration notified Congress last month that Iran is complying so far. Isn't it worth keeping the deal then in place, at least for now? Watchful waiting, if you will.
I completely disagree. Watchful waiting to allow Iran to become nuclearized? No, I completely disagree with that. Iran is a threat. They have already broken various aspects of that deal, including the stockpiling of the, I think it's called the hard water, if you will. So, and that's happened twice. This is a nation, Iran. They are evildoers in the world. They sponsor terrorism. We need to stand up and be strong against them. And I think that the Iran deal was a bad deal for the United States. Iran probably likes it, and especially since they got a couple of billion dollars on top of that.
As we speak, though, a Senate committee approved a bipartisan measure to authorize new sanctions on Iran if necessary while keeping the nuclear deal in place. Is that, do you think, an adequate way of trying to leave all of our options open?
It's a step, but for me, it's not strong enough.
If we tore up the Iran deal, though, how would we monitor them?
We're not monitoring very much as it is. I mean, that was part of what they gutted from it when the negotiations happened. We have to join with our allies around the world and stand as strong as we possibly can against terrorism. And Iran is one of the most prolific creators of state-sponsored terrorism. For heaven's sakes, we saw what happened the other night in Manchester to innocent young girls simply trying to attend a concert.
But is there any tie to Iran there? We don't know yet, but
terrorism around the world,
I'm
not going to make an assumption on that. I was talking broadly about terrorism, that we must stand up and fight united against the terrorism around the world. It is threatening not only outside of the United States, but here within our own borders.
Real quickly, you said you favor a bill that would cut off any U.S. money to the Palestinian Authority.
Because, yes, the Taylor Force Act.
Taylor Force Act, because some of that goes to terrorists and their families. Given that the Middle East is a very complicated place, without engaging with the Palestinian Authority, who else do we partner with in trying to reach a peace deal between the Israelis and the Palestinians?
Well, first of all, it is not the United States' role to quote, reach the peace deal. That has to be bilateral between the Palestinian Authority and the Israelis. Secondly, I do not consider engaging, giving money to the Palestinians to pay terrorists who have literally killed thousands of Israelis and to this date, 50 Americans. That is not the appropriate use or in a use of dollars that I can stand by. And I don't believe the people of the Sixth or the people of this country, if they really knew what was going on, would be supportive of that.
But President Trump just visited Israel and even said, we're in a unique moment when there is a move, a kind of environment for peace from the Israelis and from the Palestinians. If we are in a moment like that, does it help to do anything that might disrupt that momentum? And should the president hold off on his promise to move the American embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem?
I support moving the embassy. Again, in terms of the peace, that only lasting peace between Israel and the Palestinians is only going to be achieved with those two sitting at the table negotiating that one-on-one with each other. And I don't consider giving U.S. money from the taxpayers of this country to the Palestinian Authority to give benefits to terrorists who have killed Israelis and killed Americans as advancing anything.
I want to come back to just clarify the question about independence from folks who've raised a lot of money for you, the Republican Congressional Campaign Committee, President Trump, Vice President Pence, Speaker Ryan. If you win a very close election with the help of those folks, one could argue, as they would with Mr. Ossoff and the Democratic Campaign Committee, don't you owe them? Don't you have to basically march with them when it comes to legislation, especially if a vote is close?
Absolutely not. And let's consider that I'm probably, in Republicans as a whole, we're going to be outspent at least 3-1, if not 4-1. So the individual who's going to be beholden in all of this, should they win, is John Ossoff. Throughout my career, I've had a lot of people help me, whether it be in political campaigns or as mentors, to suggest that I would in any way make a vote that would be in line with them when it is not in the best interest of the 6th District is flat out insulting. As Fulton County Commission Chairman, I had to run a race, get contributions to win that. Never once have I let who contributes to me determine how I'm going to vote on something. It is about what is right, what is in the best interest of the people of this district.
Can you give me an example of an issue right now where you would say to the president?
I just told you that I disagree with the president around the Iran deal. I can't predict every single thing that's going to come through. I'm going to take each issue as they come. I also just told you on the president's budget, there are some good things. There are some things that are really not good that I disagree with. And I'm going to stand up and fight for what is best for the 6th District, whether it is proposed by President Trump, whether it comes from Speaker Ryan, regardless. That would be my job, my obligation.
Karen Handel is the Republican running in the runoff on June 20th in the 6th Congressional District. Secretary Handel, thanks so much for coming in and talking with us.
I really appreciate it. Always a pleasure, Dennis.